Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Rebound. I'm your host, Elijah Cooper, and I'm here with my co-host, James Jordan. How you doing today, James?
Doing all right, man. Happy Friday. Happy to be off work. You know, definitely going to talk about the Warriors taking a spanking to the Clippers, but we'll get into that later.
Yes, the NBA is back, people, and as a huge basketball fan, I could not be more excited to have basketball back on TV. NBA is back. College basketball will be back probably in the next couple of weeks. I think November 5th is the first game of the season for college basketball, so exciting times right now in basketball. So let's get right into it. Let's start with the first game of the year, Raptors and the Pelicans. Pretty good game, went into overtime. The Raptors playing for the first time without Kawhi Leonard after he led them to a championship last year. And we got a chance to see the new-look Pelicans post-AD and with a lot of the new Laker young players that they got. So what were your overall thoughts on the game, some things that stood out to you?
Honestly, with the Raptors, I feel like that game shouldn't even win in overtime. I understand it's the first game, but come on. The Pelicans do not have Zion. Yes, they're going to play a little harder, but if we look at what's on the roster, this is not what we was looking forward to. But with the Raptors, I mean, they still have Fred VanVleet. You know, they still have Siakam, Gasol, but yeah, I just feel like they just have the pieces. Like, you still have pieces from a championship team, and they just look weak at times. I mean, it just looked like it was just a back-and-forth game, pretty much. I honestly don't know what to take from it. I was a little upset when I seen that it went to overtime. Of course, without Zion, it's just like, the hell, I don't even want to watch it. So, that's pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, the Zion injury took a lot of the excitement out of it coming into it. But I think for the Pelicans, at least, the person who benefited the most from it was Brandon Ingram. He looked very aggressive, took 19 shots, wasn't super efficient, went 8 for 19, had 22 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He started off well, though. He had some good, comfortable mid-range shots that he knocked down, hit a couple of threes throughout the game also. He looked good. I just wanted to see the aggressiveness out of him. You know, 8 for 19, he isn't going to shoot that badly for the entire year. But, you know, if he can, you know, be more aggressive and establish himself as a scorer, that'll bode well for this young Pelicans team who's really looking to maximize his potential as one of the assets they got back for AD. For the Raptors, the biggest question going in for me was, can Siakam be a go-to guy? Because this is essentially, after the extension they just gave him, offensively, this is really going to be his team. He's going to be, you know, the guy who creates most of the offense. I know they have Kyle Lowry, but Kyle Lowry is more of a secondary scorer or a second or third option. Yeah, so Siakam, while inefficient, was extremely aggressive. He took 26 shots, finished with 34 points and 18 rebounds, even dished out 5 assists in that category, which, you know, him being a facilitator wasn't a big part of his game. I think if he can hover around the 4 or 5 assist mark, that'll bode well for the Raptors as well. He'll get more efficient as well. I did like seeing the aggressiveness out of him. Kyle Lowry's going to have to be better. 4 for 15 shooting is not good enough for him. So offensively, he's going to have to have a better year. But, you know, I thought the Raptors looked about as I expected in this one.
Okay. Now, quick question. What do you think about Josh Hart playing or overshadowing Lonzo Ball?
Yeah.
We all expected Lonzo to, you know, pretty much be the facilitator, but it looks like it was pretty much Brandon Ingram and then just JJ Redick the whole time. That's pretty much what I saw from the game.
Josh Hart played ended up playing more minutes, 28 minutes off the bench, and Lonzo Ball got off to a hot start, knocked down a three early on. He had a couple of good passes. He looked good in the first half, but really faded in the second half. And Josh Hart, you know, coming off the bench was excellent. 4 for 9 shooting, 15 points, 10 boards. So he was really solid for them. And I thought, you know, he kind of helped keep them alive in that game as well. Lonzo Ball's definitely going to have to be better, though. You know, his stock is dropping as far as his potential to be, you know, a consistent all-star level point guard. And that's what you expect out of someone you took with the number two pick. And then someone you got in a trade for Anthony Davis. So his development is really going to be crucial for the Pelicans going forward.
Yeah, definitely agree with you.
So now we got to talk about my Sixers coming away with a win against Boston in their home opener. 107-93 was the final there. And these are two teams that we talked about quite a bit coming into the season, especially Boston. With the, you know, losing Kyrie, losing Al Horford. What did you think about Boston in this one? About what you expected, or even more disappointing than expectations?
I mean, like I told you, I know they have some key players there, Boston, talking about Boston. Mm-hmm. And then, but when you look at the roster, it's like besides Tatum, Hayward, Cantor, Walker, and then Brown, Marcus Smart, mm-hmm. who else do they have to come off the bench and produce? And then half of the players that I mentioned are not even necessarily scorers.
Right.
So if you look, you see Tatum, he has 21. Hayward, he has 25. And then next you have Kantir, Kemba Walker having 12. And then Jaylen Brown at 8. This is the same guy that they offer extension to. And this guy is giving you 8 points to just 7 rebounds and no assists.
Yeah.
And not facilitate the ball. So either this is simply just miscommunication at the beginning of the season, or it's the same thing that we saw overseas, that these guys are just not gelling together. And I honestly don't see them fixing this throughout the season. But the 76ers is pretty much everything that I expect. So pretty much an all-around balanced team. I expected a little bit more from the bench, especially with Kyle O'Quinn and James Ennis, just a little bit more from the three-point line.
Yeah.
But Josh Richardson was a good pickup. He got your guy 17. Ben Simmons, he did everything that I thought he was supposed to do, facilitate the ball, clean the glass, and then he scored 24. Expected a little bit more from him. Well, I expected a little bit more from Embiid, but yeah. Second guess, he also has Al Horford, so mm-hmm. he doesn't necessarily need to get 20 and 15 every game. Mm-hmm. So that's totally fine. But yeah, the 76ers is everything that I thought they were. Well balanced team. Only one player with 20, which was Ben. So yeah, I think it should be good throughout the season. I'm looking forward to see what kind of matchups they get down the season.
Yeah, this game went exactly as I expected it to go. And the Sixers, which most people, you know, expected coming into the season, were excellent defensively. You got Josh Richardson, you know, who was hounding Kemba Walker. And then off the bench, Matisse Thybulle, who was the Sixers' first-round pick this year. And everybody's been raving about his defense, kid coming out of Washington. And he was magnificent on Kemba Walker. He is aggressive and really a hungry defender that they bring off of the bench. And can even knock down a three from spot up. He went 1-for-3 in this one. But, you know, he's a solid three-point shooter. Not great, not bad, but a pretty solid three-point shooter for them. But, you know, Ben Simmons was ultra-aggressive in this one. And, you know, normally when he comes out and he plays that way, the Sixers win. He didn't take a three. He got all of his baskets in the paint. But he was aggressive. He posted up a lot. Like, the fact that they have, you know, Horford and Embiid now and a really big lineup, you know, spacing was a little bit of an issue, and the way they shot from the three-point line probably won't cut it late in the season. But if they can get Ben Simmons to continuously be that aggressive and then start adding the jump shot to his game, it's really going to be scary. And this Sixers team, but defensively, that team is elite. Nobody that comes on the floor for them is under 6'4". Except for Raul Neto ended up getting a minute in garbage time. But in their regular rotation, there isn't anyone under 6'5", that's in their regular, you know, rotation, which gives them this unbelievable length to defend. And I think the Sixers are pretty much going, like, completely contrarian to what, like, analytics and the new style of basketball is asking for, where you're like, you know, you're looking for big time floor spacing. You got one big man who protects the rim, four shooters out on the perimeter. The Sixers are like, all right, well, if everybody's going in this direction, we're going to get a big defensive lineup and, you know, play like a bully ball style of game and get our points in transition after we get stops. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works throughout the season. They're going to be in a lot of these kind of ugly, low-scoring games. Like, both teams shot the ball awfully. The Celtics were 33 for 90 from the field. Sixers were 37 for 85. So both teams really shot it poorly. But the Sixers just, you know, happened to shoot it a little bit better. And I am interested to see how, you know, that bodes for them going forward. Especially, my biggest concern with them is playoff time and crunch time in the playoffs.
Yeah, 8-3s.
Right. How's it going to work when the game slows down? You have to win in the half court. Will they be able to do that is going to be the big question. So now we have to talk about the Clippers, because first of all, they started opening night with a big win against the Lakers in the Battle of LA, something everybody was looking forward to coming into this year after the offseason moves that were made by both of those teams. And then they followed it up with the blowout win against the Warriors. But we'll start with the Battle of LA. James, what happened in this game? It looked, you know, the final score ended up as a 12-point difference, but it wasn't really as close as, or I'm sorry, a 10-point difference, but it wasn't really as close as in that fourth quarter as the final score made it look like.
Yeah, so, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, the Lakers are the Lakers. They have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, when I look at the box score, you have Anthony Davis with 25, you have LeBron with 18, and then you also have Danny Green with 28, which surprised me.
Yeah.
I expected a little bit more from Avery Bradley with only 8, Dwight Howard with only 3, and then Quinn Cook. He's coming from a Warriors team, hungry. I expected this kid to just ball out, at least give me 10 to 12 points. He only gave me 4. Mm-hmm. We definitely need more from the bench. And then you also signed Jared Dudley to be this guy to come off the bench, play a little defense, and then shoot the occasional 3. He's only giving me 6 points. And then Troy Daniels, he gave me what I thought he was going to give me, 6 points. Mm-hmm. It's the same story with LeBron James. See, supporting cast, they got to show up. Even LeBron James, I felt like he underperformed at times. In that fourth quarter, he was afraid to shoot the 3. Mm-hmm. He was afraid to take control. This is his team still. He has to dominate. Mm-hmm. When it's the fourth quarter, he has to get away from the early LeBron James that we knew. He just didn't. He just never made any decisions in the fourth quarter. He just shied away from the moment. So right now, that's what I'm saying with the Lakers. I feel like they're trying to figure out who's going to be the closer. Is it going to be Anthony Davis or is it going to be LeBron?
Right.
I'm not in panic mode. Eventually, they'll get it figured out, and then they will contend later in the season. But my hat's off is to the Clippers. I mean, even without Paul George, I mean, the score was only a 10-point difference, but to me, I just feel like it was a tie ball game in the third quarter. Then they just pulled away in the fourth quarter. They just shut everything down on defense.
Yeah.
Kawhi, he was hitting his shots, playing defense, and then also his bench helped him out. We already know that Lou Williams is going to help him out, but you got to also think about Montrezl Harrell, Maurice Harkless, and then Jermichael Green. He also surprised me a little bit with defense. So, I mean, these cats are for real. Honestly, you can't even chalk them up for a title right now. I mean, it's way too early. But if we had to pick one, it would definitely be the Clippers. Because, for one, we're not even talking about Paul George in this lineup right now.
Yeah, and that's really the scary thing about this team is the two quality wins to start the year against two what I consider playoff teams, and we'll get to the Warriors in a second, but you know, two quality wins to start the year for them. They were my pick to win it all because of how well constructed they are, and the way they look without Paul George right now is making that pick look pretty good. But as far as this game goes, the biggest concern for me was LeBron and AD, like you said, struggling in the fourth. Just 2 points combined between the two of them in the fourth quarter. They're never going to win basketball games like that. And I think LeBron is deferring a little bit too much to Anthony Davis right now because he's trying to make him comfortable. And they've said throughout the year they're going to have the offense run through Anthony Davis. And, you know, to me, don't get me wrong, Anthony Davis is a special talent. But LeBron James is still the best player in the league, in my opinion. So, you know, to see him, one, take less shots than Anthony Davis did, and he was actually really inefficient on those shots, but to see him going back to deferring, kind of like what he did with, you know, when he first got in Miami with D-Wade, that was not a recipe of success for them. LeBron James deferring is not a recipe of success for any team that he's playing on. He has to be the main guy. He has to be the player that you play around. And then the other thing that is a concern is Anthony Davis playing the four. And I mentioned it when we talked about these two teams in our earlier episodes. Anthony Davis is not as efficient or as effective at the power forward spot. It's just a fact. He's much more of a matchup problem at the five. And the Lakers may have to learn that the hard way. And I think it'll be better for them in the long run to bring a guy like JaVale McGee off of the bench rather than having him in your starting lineup. And you add another shooter in there. I know they actually, after that first game, they discussed Rondo possibly starting a few games at the point guard spot this year. So, you know, not sure that I love the fit with him and LeBron on the floor at the same time, but it's better than JaVale McGee being out there because either way, it pushes Anthony Davis to the five. And I think that's where he needs to be. And they need to space the floor with shooters but around LeBron and AD and play that way so those two can maximize their effectiveness without having to worry about deferring to each other. You know, they'll each get their equal touches. As far as the Clippers go, their depth is what separates them. And, you know, somehow Kawhi ends up finding himself on another deep team. Like, and not a team loaded with stars. You know, like the Spurs had aging superstars, but and then Toronto didn't have superstars, but everybody who stepped on the floor for them was productive. And, you know, and he has the same thing here with the Clippers. And I think he kind of knew that coming in, and it's what attracted him to the Clippers. He knew he needed another star in Paul George to come join him, and that's kind of what he told the Clippers. You get Paul George, you get me. So he knew he would have at least another star with him along with all the depth that they have. Honestly, the fact that they landed Paul George without sacrificing any of that depth was huge for them this offseason. And I think this team is going to be dangerous going forward. So let's just get right over to the Warriors game right after that they played on Wednesday night. Yeah, Wednesday night, or no, last night, I'm sorry. It's Friday night as we're doing this taping, by the way. So last night they beat the Warriors pretty soundly, 141-122. We've talked enough about the Clippers. Are you concerned about the Warriors?
No, I'm not pressing the panic button.
Okay.
I feel like the Warriors was just trying to get a feel for what they want to do throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they ran up-tempo most of the game.
Yeah.
The only thing that's going to hurt them if they run up-tempo, so I feel like they have to be a little bit more strategic this season,
mm-hmm.
Is that they don't have the defense that they had previously.
Yes.
So that's going to be a big thing. If they're running up-tempo, you gotta remember that, okay, I'm looking for a steal and then for a three, and then, you know, when I get back on defense, I'm looking for a good defensive stop, and then we're going to push the ball. Right. That's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. So their opposing team should be running out the clock, at least. Mm-hmm. But at least with the Clippers, they kept running the up-tempo, and mm-hmm. I felt like the Warriors just couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
So that's just my feel for it. I'm not hitting the panic mode yet. I know the Warriors are trying different things out because they have a lot of new pieces, especially with Jordan Poole. I can't wait to see how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
And even with Damian Lee. So... I'm eager to see that down the season, but another good win for the Clippers. I mean, like we say, Kawhi, and then also his supporting cast. Mm-hmm. Even Patrick Patterson had 20, which surprised me.
Yeah,
that kid was balling out.
Mm-hmm.
And then also your old guy Landry Shamet with 11.
Yeah,
he looked energized. He had 34 minutes.
Yeah,
he was playing some good minutes, some good defense, and he hit some clutch threes out there. I like what I see from the Clippers, man.
Yeah, I love Landry Shamet, former Sixer, for the first part of his rookie year. An unfortunate sacrifice for the Sixers to get Tobias Harris. But in regards to the Warriors, I agree with you. I'm not pressing the panic button at all. They unfortunately got the best team in the league on opening night. And, you know, this is kind of what you get when you have a complete roster overhaul. Like, everybody on this Warriors team that stepped on the floor for them last night was new except for Curry, Kevon Looney, and Draymond Green. Everybody else had never played a minute for Golden State before this season. So that's a lot of roster change for a team that is very systematic, you know what I mean, as far as their motion offense goes and what they try to do, the emphasis they put on, you know, their rotations and things like that defensively. I agree with you. I think they have to adjust their pace because they're not as good defensively at all from what they used to be. I think the Andre Iguodala loss was really bad for them, you know, along with obviously the Klay Thompson injury is hurting them. But, yeah, I'm not ready to panic. They put up 122 points, which on most nights is going to
play better defense.
Yeah, on most nights that's going to win you games. But, and, you know, you give up 140, you're not beating anybody. But most teams in the league won't be able to put up 140 points a night.
Right. Like,
so they will obviously improve defensively. They're also missing Willie Cauley-Stein, who's going to be an anchor for them defensively when he gets back. So, you know, you got to factor that in as well. You know, Jordan Poole, who you mentioned earlier, off the bench was 2-for-13. That's not going to last. I think he's going to be an effective scorer off the bench to give them some more offense. So I think, like, people were concerned about, like, where are the Warriors' points going to come from? Well, that doesn't seem to be the issue. You know, Curry's going to is going to give you more than 23 a game. Russell will probably give you around the 20 to 23 range. You know what you're going to get out of Draymond Green. But, you know, I think they're going to get more scoring out of Jacob Evans and Jordan Poole. Well, Jacob Evans will give you about what he gave you last night, but they're going to get more scoring out of Jordan Poole off the bench going forward. Maurice Chris looked good off the bench for them as well. So I'm not pressing the panic button. I still think they're a top five seed in the West. You know, obviously this game doesn't really show how good they're going to be. They're going through almost a rebuild, really, you know, because of all that they lost and the Klay Thompson injury. So let's hold off on saying the Warriors aren't going to make the playoffs and things like that before we actually get to see this team, you know, play against someone who isn't the best in the league. Now, let's move on and move to the Eastern Conference. Well, it was an interconference game between the Nets and the T-Wolves. Kyrie Irving, in his new Threads plan for the Brooklyn Nets for the first time, and dropped 50, but in a loss. So, you know, is this concerning to you? They put up 50, go to overtime, and still lose?
I mean, honestly, that's just going to be the type of season it's going to be for the Nets. They're just asking for a complete overhaul from Kyrie Irving. But, I mean, even LeVert had 20. I believe they have some injuries right now. But besides that, I just see, you know, a couple players with 14, 15, 14. Then you go down, you see 2 points, 4 points, 6 points. It's not going to cut it. So, and then also, they're not really a good defensive team right now. I mean, DeAndre Jordan, he has to get into the swing of things. And then also, just with the Timberwolves, I mean, they just outplayed them in overtime. I mean, there's nothing much to say about it. You have Carl Anthony Towns with 36. He dominated. He completely dominated that game.
Yeah.
Especially in overtime. But, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much what you're going to get from them the most of the season. It's not really much to talk about in the matchup. It's just, honestly, the New York teams, man, they just have bad luck.
Yeah, especially with, did you see the move Kyrie did at the end of that game before?
All right. So we're not going to get into that. The dude fell. All right. They try to gas it up and make it seem like it was a street bubble. The dude fell on his butt and he got up and put the shot up. If you would have made it, okay. Right, that's fine. But
Yeah, definitely not intentional slip and slide move is what they call that on NBA Street. But yeah, definitely not intentional. But he ended up getting a good look, almost, you know, clutch that game for them. But this is kind of the story of Kyrie-led teams, right? You know, you get amazing performances out of him, but they, you know, lose to a team that didn't even make the playoffs last year. So, in overtime, in a pretty high-scoring game. So defense may be an issue for the Nets. But this is clearly KD's team waiting for him to get back. When he gets back, then they look pretty scary at that point. But right now they're going to be a middle of the pack Eastern Conference team, which is about what, if Kyrie Irving is your best player, that's probably the kind of season that you're looking at. And don't get me wrong, he's extremely exciting to watch. I love Kyrie Irving, but he just doesn't have the impact on wins and losses like some of the upper echelon players in the league do. So the last game, or I'm sorry, we got two more games to talk about. The Nuggets and Blazers, which was a repeat of a second round game from last year's Western Conference. Those two teams battling out in the late game on Wednesday night. Nuggets came away with an 8-point win. For those of you who may not remember, these two went 7 games last year with the Blazers, ended up advancing in the playoffs. So what were your thoughts on this game? Some key takeaways that you took from it?
I mean, the Nuggets, they still look strong. I mean, although I predicted that there'll be a little bit more scoring from their supporting cast, but, you know, the Nuggets, they had Jokic with 20 points. And then next, you had Will Barton at 19 coming off the bench. Well, actually, I believe he started that game. Mm-hmm. And then Jamal Murray, I mean, he gave me 14, 6, and 5. I'll let that slide, but we know down the season he's going to put up 20 points. But the downside with the Trailblazers, CJ McCollum, that was a big question mark for me. He put in a lot of minutes, but not a lot of production. Trying to figure out, was it defense? Was it the tempo? Like, they just didn't look the same. I mean, maybe it's Hassan Whiteside. They're trying to get in a groove with him. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's just a big question mark for me right now. I kind of rooted for the Trailblazers to be in the top four this season when it comes to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Because I predicted that Hassan Whiteside would be able to focus on just defense and small ball on offense. Mm-hmm. But that didn't seem like the case in this game. I actually picked the Blazers to win that one, so I'm glad I'm not a bet man.
Yeah, it was a pretty low-scoring game. Neither team shot it super well from the field, which you kind of expect in season openers for teams. So CJ McCollum having 12 points on 18 shots is an outlier. Nothing really big to look into there. I kind of wanted to see Nazir Little get some time for them off of the bench, but he was a DNP coach's decision. As a UNC guy, that was a little unfortunate, something I was looking forward to. And Michael Porter Jr., who we thought was healthy coming into the season but didn't play, you know, maybe they're not comfortable putting him out there just yet. So those are two young guys who could be cornerstone players for these franchises going forward. We'd like to see them get some more run, and we probably will when they play against lesser teams. We should see Michael Porter Jr. eventually. But, you know, the Nuggets did it their you know, normal way. 5 guys in double-digit scoring, real balance. Then they had, you know, guys with 9, 8, 6, and 6. So they got guys that chip in here and there. Blazers were heavily reliant on Damian Lillard, who had 32. And then, you know, CJ just, you know, couldn't get the ball to drop. So nothing to really overreact to in that game or talk about too much. The Blazers will be better, and even the Nuggets will be better than the performances we saw from each of those teams. So not too concerned there.
Okay.
And then the last big game that we got to talk about is the Rockets and Bucks. You know, obviously the Rockets had a huge offseason move, sending Chris Paul to OKC in exchange for Russell Westbrook. The Bucks, last year's number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and ended up losing in the Eastern Conference Finals. Ended up coming out with the win here, 117-111. It was a pretty back and forth game the entire way, and came down to the wire. But the Rockets, already we saw Westbrook and Harden having a little bit of dispute, not a big deal, but we already saw them kind of on the season opener having a little discussion on the sideline that was a little animated. And neither of them were particularly convincing in this one. Are you concerned about the Rockets at all?
I mean, not really. I mean, they're clearly close friends, so they're just trying to figure out how they're going to play together. And, you know, they haven't played with each other for a couple of years. So they're going to figure it out. I mean, not a good game from James Harden with 19 points. I mean, he had 14 assists, but you know he's looking to score the ball.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't see it as a big thing. I mean, Milwaukee's still a good team, although they lost Brogdon. But they're still going to put up numbers and play good defense and rebound. Mm-hmm. So you can't you have to tip off your hat to the Bucks. They just got the job done in opening night.
Yeah, I thought they were excellent as well, especially Giannis. You know, coming off of an MVP season, James Harden had a lot to say about not winning that MVP award. Giannis, not so much. He basically just shrugged it off. He's like, listen, it was in the past. So, you know, he didn't, obviously as the winner, he didn't have much to say about it. But his game did. He came out, had 30, 13, and 11, shot it efficiently, even knocked down two threes, ended up fouling out. Late in the game and only played 28 minutes because of foul trouble, but a triple double in 28 minutes in kind of a statement game, you know, against someone who has openly kind of, you know, said that you didn't deserve MVP. I thought that was a big statement by him coming out and playing well. You know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, this was the concern for me with this Rockets team. They're both ball-dominant players that need the ball to be effective. And, you know, Russell Westbrook actually looked better than James Harden. I'm sure that will reverse as the year goes on. But even still, he was 7 for 17 from the field, not really efficient. But James Harden was 2 for 13. You know, so for me, it's just obviously they're going to have to work to find that balance on how it's going to work between those two. But because of the way D'Antoni's teams play, you know, there's going to be times where both of them are standing as spot-up, you know, shooters without the ball in their hands and without the opportunity to do what they do best, which is create. And when they're in those positions where they have to be essentially spot-up shooters, you know, that's one of the least effective parts of each of their games. Like, Harden can knock them down, don't get me wrong, but he's not the greatest shooter in the world. He's a volume shooter. And Russell Westbrook has had his career issues on shooting as well, even though 3 for 7 on opening night wasn't bad. But that's, you know, just my concern with them is, you know, how are they going to work out that dynamic? I thought James Harden and Chris Paul actually did a good job of it, but it's because Chris Paul is better at playing off of the ball than what Russell Westbrook is. So, you know, that was my concern with them. And that opening night game didn't ease those concerns for me, really. But I understand it's early and they have kinks to work out, so we'll see how the dynamic between those two stars works out going forward. So that's all that we have as far as the game reviews go, talking about the first couple of nights. Now, it's Friday night, like I said, as we're recording this, so we only covered games up until Thursday night. We understand there's games going on right now. We will get to we'll do game reviews for some, you know, the popular ones in those in the next episode. And now what we want to get into is talking about the upcoming games for this Saturday up until Monday, and, you know, give you some previews and our predictions on what we think is going to happen in those. So we're going to start with my beloved Sixers taking on the Detroit Pistons, who the Pistons have actually looked pretty good. They play on Saturday at 7. So Pistons 1-1 so far, Sixers 1-0 after the win in Boston. Who you got in this one and why?
I would still say the Sixers just because I feel like they're still going to be overpowered with their bigs. Well, I don't think Blake Griffin's going to be back in this game. Mm-hmm. So I'm still picking the Sixers to overpower them. yes, the Sixers are going to struggle from the three. I just don't see the Pistons overwhelming them from the three as well. So I just have the Sixers in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Sixers as well, mostly because of the Blake Griffin injury. I think even if he was healthy, though, I would still have I would still have the Sixers in that one. But, yeah, like you said, I think the Sixers will be a bit much for them defensively. I do want to talk a little bit about Andre Drummond. His opening night game was superb. He had 30 and 22 in his first game, so he's come out, and then 21 and 12 in the second. He's, you know, come out in, or I'm sorry, 32 and 23 in the first game. But he's been dominant so far without Blake Griffin on the floor, probably because the spacing is slightly better. But, you know, when Blake Griffin comes back, if he can continue to give them that kind of production, you know, the Pistons could be a team to watch out for. You know, they're bringing, like, Derrick Rose off of the bench right now.
He also had a good game, too.
Yeah, he had 18 in the opener for them. So, you know, that gives them some scoring and a playmaker off of the bench, which is great for them. I think the Pistons are going to be a solid middle-of-the-pack Eastern Conference team this year to watch out for. And it's going to be a physical game between them and the Sixers. I am going to go with the Sixers. I think it's going to be low scoring. It's going to be a little bit ugly. You know, they're going to mix it up, and it's going to bode well for the Sixers, who seem to want to play that style. And also, now, before we get into the next game that we're going to talk about, we're also going to be tracking our game predictions going so far. So right now, I'm sitting at 3-0 after picking the Raptors and Clippers on opening night, and then I picked the Celtics over the Sixers on Twitter, so I'm going to count that. So 3-0 to start. James, unfortunately, wasn't on for the first episode of Game Predictions, so we will start with his predictions here on this episode that we're going through. Now, the next game we want to get into is the Knicks and the Celtics. Celtics will be looking to rebound after an opening night loss to the Sixers. The Knicks right now will be looking to bounce back from an opening night loss as well. Who do you got in this one, James? And any players that you're looking out for in this matchup?
I wouldn't be surprised if the Knicks pull away with this one, but I'm gonna go with the Celtics just because right now they still have some key pieces. I think Kemba's gonna pick it up this game, and I also think Gordon Hayward is gonna have a really efficient game. One thing that I'm looking for is just for Gordon Hayward to get back to that mid-range game that he had in Utah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for. If he can get back to that Gordon Hayward, which is probably is hard to ask for considering the injuries he's been through. I feel like he'll be extremely helpful to this team. And then right now, I just don't. The Knicks are trying to find their identity, and they just need a little bit more time to figure it out and to be able to beat teams like the Celtics.
I'm going to go against you in this one. I'm going to take the Knicks. I think Julius Randle, who seems to be the number one option for them this year after their opening night game, he had 25, 11, and 6 in that one. And he looks like he's primed to have a really big season for this team. So I'm really liking how Julius Randle is looking. RJ Barrett started at the point guard spot for them, which was surprising. And, you know, one of the things I thought was underrated about his game was his ability to distribute the ball. And, you know, the Knicks must have saw it as well. They're starting him at the point, especially when they have Dennis Smith Jr. and they have Frank Nikilina, the kid from France. I'm sorry, I butchered that last name. But who had a big World Cup for France, and people were kind of excited to see what he'll do for the Knicks. He gets 3 minutes. And Dennis Smith Jr. only gets 10 because R.J. Barrett played 37 minutes at the point guard spot, so which was a surprise to pretty much everyone. I don't think anyone was expecting that coming into the year. I really liked him at that spot. He had 21 points, 5 rebounds, 9 of 13 shooting. You know, he's a guy who kind of needs the ball in his hands to be effective. So I think that actually is going to go bode well for them. I think that's a pretty good coaching decision. I think they're kind of wasting a gem in Dennis Smith Jr. I'm still a strong believer in him and his upside. So 10 minutes for him is a little bit concerning. But I like the scrappiness of this Knicks team. I like the mentality that Marcus Morris, or Markieff Morris, I'm sorry, has set for them going forward. So, you know, as far as that tough, like, no one's going to mess with us, you know, kind of mentality. And, you know, I think that's going to bode well for the Knicks against the team and the Celtics who are, you know, still trying to figure it out. I'm sorry, I was correct the first time. It is Marcus Morris, Marcus Morris Sr. that they have. So, you know, I think that kind of gritty, and actually they're playing the Nets tonight, and I just got an update about them getting in a scuffle. So, you know, that's the kind of team that they're coming out there being. They're saying, we're going to be physical. We're not going to take any crap from anybody. And I think against the Celtics team with younger players that are trying to lead and, you know, without that lack of leadership that they lost with Al Horford, I think they steal that game against Boston. So how confident are you in the Celtics? What do you think? You want to make this one our weekly wager?
I mean, we can bet on it.
Okay. So for those of you tuning in, this is something that we're going to do throughout the year with our college and NBA picks. We call it our weekly wager, where whenever we do game predictions, if we have, you know, something that we not disagree on, but, well, I guess disagree would be the word, or a pick that we're opposite ends on, we're going to do a weekly wager on it, and then we'll update you guys, let you know who won. We're going to keep track of them, and then at the end of the year of all basketball, and, you know, all the way throughout the NBA Finals, you know, whoever has, you know, who lost the most wagers has to pay up in some way that, you know, we'll figure out eventually. But this is, you know, something fun for us to do to kind of, you know, keep track of, you know, who's doing well with their game prediction. And then the last one that I want to get into for next week's or Saturday through Monday's games is the Blazers versus the Mavs. The Blazers will be looking to bounce back after the loss to the Nuggets that we just talked about. And the Mavs, who have Porzingis now, coming off of a win in their season opener. They play Sunday night. Two teams that will be a tough out in the West, especially with Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis for the Mavs, and obviously Dame and CJ in Portland. Who you got in that one?
Honestly, I'm going to take the Mavs just because I just see Kristaps and Luka as a mismatched nightmare. So I'm a play it bold, but I'm an honest believer in the Mavericks right now.
I am a believer in the Mavericks as well. I really liked what I saw from them in their season opener. But I think the Blazers are going to be hungry to get back on track in this one. And I don't think Dallas has the perimeter defense necessary to really guard Dame and CJ. So I am going to go with the Blazers in this one. As they're hungry to come back and get a victory in this game. All right, so those are the three games that we're looking out for. Again, those are Saturday through Monday. Any games happening tonight, we will review on our next episode, which will be coming to you Tuesday night. So stay tuned, be ready for that. And then we'll also talk about, you know, the games that we previewed for this one as well. So, you know, that's all the topics we had for you today. Again, we want to thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of The Rebound. For those of you listening in, you can find us on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, any of those kind of outlets. We are not yet on Apple. We're still waiting on approval there. You know, just stay tuned for that. Make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at The Rebound Pod. And you can also follow me and James individually and hear our thoughts throughout the week on, you know, different games and basketball topics. I'm at EL1_Coop. James, you want to give him your Twitter handle?
Life is a_gamble3.
All right. So that's where you can follow me and James individually. And then the Rebound Pod is where we'll have our discussions. You know, ask you guys for your topics and, you know, get into that, you know, kind of discussions with you guys there. Again, we want to thank you guys for tuning in. James, anything before we sign off?
Nah, man, just let us know what you think about our picks. You know, we're happy to interact with you guys. Yeah, just let us know, and then we'll just let you know what we think.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. We'll be running polls on our game preview predictions, so make sure you're following at the Rebound Pod to vote, you know, and help us out there. So, episode 5 closing out. I'm Elijah Cooper signing off with my co-host, James Jordan. Y'all be cool. Y'all be cool, all right? Water.